Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a valley that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening here in Central Kentucky, where I, Stephen Zimmer, am broadcasting from at the moment. It's going to be a very good night here for episode number 382, and definitely want to give a shout-out to the band Far Cry and their fearless leader, Pete Fry, a great fretboard wizard songwriter deluxe, who they all kindly gave us permission to use that intro music, which we love so much. We love that song so much, and the band. And Pete, for that matter. But it is going to be a good show tonight, folks. We're going to have a lot of great discussion with tonight's guest. Looking forward to bringing you that and a lot more. And looks like last week you all really enjoyed having Bobby Craig from the Fabled Forest Bookstore in Georgetown, Kentucky. We actually got quite a lot of good feedback from that show last week. And a lot of new listeners even. And so, yeah, we definitely want to welcome those of you who are back from last week for sure. And definitely we'll try to give some more coverage to bookstore owners and folks like that in the future. Definitely that was a really interesting conversation. And I know that Holly and myself and Metalbeck also enjoyed it quite a bit. And speaking of Metalbeck is in the chat room as we speak. So she is the first in there. It is working tonight. So if you have any trouble logging in, just go ahead and refresh the browser. Because sometimes it gets a little finicky when logging in, and sometimes there's a little bit of trouble with that. So just make sure that you refresh the browser. So, yes, that's always an adventure when you're doing a live podcast, that's for sure. it's always an adventure. Always an adventure. And also hope those of you in the States, I know we have a big international, we do have a lot of international listeners, but those in the States that were celebrating the Labor Day weekend, with this past Monday being Labor Day, hope you all had a great, relaxing weekend. Unfortunately, yours truly got a little under the weather, and I am on the mend. However, I am on the mend, and I was very careful coming into this week. But yes, I was delayed a little bit on getting the hours I normally get in on work. So a little delayed on a few announcements for Imaginarium. There's a lot pending, so we don't have a whole lot on that front to announce tonight. But looks like joining me right now is the wonderful, the lovely, the vivacious Holly Philippi, and with Holly tonight is the one and only Metalbeck Harrison. So yes, we welcome Holly and Metalbeck, who are should be on this mic right now. Hopefully, we'll see.
Hello.
There they are. We have contact. Good. Welcome.
We're lurking. And
I heard there was a wine emergency at the last second, so hopefully that was resolved, and hopefully the wine was secured.
It's resolved. The wine has flowed.
Good. And a little bit of celebration today, because I like to give Holly a little I love you presents from time to time, and today one of those arrived. It is a very special one, and it celebrates a book-related event, Stephen King's latest novel, which is by a certain name that we all know. Holly, yes. Stephen King's new novel titled Holly came out today, so of course, we had to get the hardcover for Holly. So, yeah, she has a copy of Stephen King's new novel, and but believes she plans on diving into it, if that's what I gathered from earlier. Right, Holly?
After I finished that the Hunger Games, you know, last book here.
Yeah, the prequel, I think, right? You know, that's what you're reading on that one,
yeah.
Is that prequel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Songbirds and Snakes. Don't like the title, but, you know, it'll be okay.
Yep. Yeah, we know Holly
good.
And Snakes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Holly and their Snakes. Their love, sarcasm intended, of snakes. Yeah, that's for sure on that title. But the novel Holly still awaits. And Holly, in this case, is the protagonist, I believe, the character. I read enough of the synopsis that Holly is not the villain or the monster, folks. So, yeah, I can hear the jokes coming. Stephen King novel. But, no, she's the protagonist. She is the protagonist. So, yeah, and definitely I'll give a shout-out to Sandy Leonard, who just joined the chat room. Congrats to Sandy. Sandy did a book writing marathon this weekend. It was like a 3-day event, and Sandy just went full throttle over 3 days and got an entire book done on time, I might add. So, yeah, we didn't bother Sandy on Tuesday because we imagined she was recovering from this marathon, but congratulations on finishing that. That's fantastic news. And yeah, definitely was glad to hear that Sandy was successful in her mission and got the book done. And sorry to hear Sandy's feeling a little under the weather. I know what that's like, Sandy. So yeah, she might have to bow out early on the chat room, but glad you're here for right now. And always good to see you. And of course, always good to see Moon, Dewan Hurd. Yeah, screenwriter, author, podcaster. Yeah, just a great guy. And he's going to be in for a treat tonight because we have a fantastic author guest coming here just shortly. But I'll go ahead and we'll show some love to the folks that brought you tonight's show, one of whom I just mentioned, Sandy Lender, and then also the amazing Ren Garcia. And still haven't gotten the absolute yet from Ren, but I do think he's tilting toward coming to Imaginarium next summer. So let's keep the pressure
Guess
up
I'll
on him if you
him.
Interact with Ren.
Guess I'll have to blame myself.
Yeah, we're all going to have to start just a campaign, just bug the heck out of him. He won't know where it came from, just like all these messages coming from all around. But yeah, Ren Garcia, we need to get him out that next summer and get him out of his home state of Ohio for a little bit. But here we'll go ahead and give Ren a little love on his spot, and then we're going to explore some good choices that you can make as a reader with Sandy's spot just after. But here's Ren.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren Garcia. Yes, indeed, we are weird enough for you.
Most definitely. All three of us here, Metalbeck, myself, and, of course, Holly. Well, Holly's a weird enough, definitely, the name itself is gracing the cover of a Stephen King novel. So, hey, Ren, we qualify. But we'll move over here to explore choices and folks, make good choices in your life by buying Sandy Lender books. So here, listen carefully, and then you know what to do. Head over to Amazon, buy some books.
Prophecy stirring in the land of Onveiled, dragons rise and an unclean army marches toward Amanda Sharif. Our unsure heroine has choices to make and enemy lives to take in Sandy Lender's epic fantasy series, available now from 7-Star Press. Choices meant for gods, choices meant for kings, and choices meant for all offer girl power Machiavellian adventure of hope versus despair, a chosen one versus free will, and good versus evil. Learn more at AuthorSandyLender.com.
Thank you, Sandy. And yes, all about making good choices. So there you go, folks. Yeah, the two folks that brought you tonight's show, support them, show them some love. And yes, we're going to, you ready tonight? Yeah, I know Holly's looking forward to tonight quite a bit because she actually worked very closely with tonight's guest. We'll get into that and the role that she had with tonight's guest in a moment. But I know Holly Holly probably's gonna do a lot of interviewing tonight, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I have a lot of things I want him to elaborate on.
Yeah, because I figure you did. I figure you did, and I don't think well, hopefully very soon, yeah, Metalbeck will get a chance to read the particular book we're going to go through. But yeah, she should Beck, you should definitely pipe in with some good questions as you get them, because it's going to be a cool discussion, and I think I can say that, yeah, definitely it'll be a very interesting interview for sure about a very good novel. And yeah, I've been looking forward to this one for quite a bit, actually. So finally got this guest on the show, and hopefully next summer we will get this guest also out to the convention, which would be awesome. And then also to some, you know, see this guest at some events. So definitely looking forward to that. But do you have any updates, Holly, that you need to give, anything particular before we get
the
call?
Not particular, no.
No, this is a quieter week.
I'm looking at a great workshops. I'm going to be emailing a few people and getting arranged, and we'll be able to announce workshops very shortly because, boy, oh boy, I keep saying every year, I don't think it's going to get better, but here we are.
It always does.
It always does. And I'm telling you, I've already got some dingers that I definitely know I'm going to be adding to the programming.
Yeah, so speaking of humdingers, I'm dying to talk about the people that Holly has been interacting with for some of the top like guest spots, like Guest of Honor and Imaginator guests. Yeah, there's some huge names that we're in contact
working
with, and that's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds. But yeah, we're going to bring you some big names next year too. That's going to be quite a bit of fun. And of course, yeah, don't forget, yeah, until September 20th. So you have about 2 weeks, 2 weeks to go. And that's it for the discount period. Discounts on Expo Space and Creative's Alley and in the main Expo Hall, discounts on full weekend event tickets. And then also, we do have early discounts on film submissions, film entries, and those are open at Film Freeway and the International Screenwriters Association. You got to head over to those platforms to do those entries. But those are open also for early discounts for a limited time as well. So don't miss discounts, because we open up this window to help the folks that come every year get some nice savings. So don't miss out on that for sure. And, of course, we all always looking for new sponsors and individual patrons. And so that is another area that if you're inclined, take a look at what we have to offer there. And, yeah, we'd love to have you come aboard if that's something that interests you. So we have let's see here. I'm just checking to see if we have the call yet. Not just yet. So we got just checking also in the chat room.
Oh, well, I do want to make one announcement, is the fact that our metal back here started at Panera Bread this week.
Yes. Congratulations. Yes, you got a new position there and doing very
not
well.
Bringing home all the bread. Yes.
Yes,
bread, we bringing
some,
home the bread.
Yes, bringing home the bread.
And
I'm grateful for that.
She was able to, they gave her an apron to give to me, which was like the best thing ever, because I've always loved the Panera aprons. I think they're little aprons that they wore all the time to work in were just the cutest things ever. And they don't wear them all the time now, apparently, up front, but actually let her bring me one home. So I'm tickled to death.
Yes, Holly just lit up like a Christmas tree when Beck gave her that and immediately put it on, like within like seconds. But yeah, Holly looked like a natural. That was awesome. Yeah, that was too cool. I'm thinking that Holly's going to be wearing that quite a bit when she's doing her chef activity in the kitchen. As we all know, Holly is a culinary enthusiast, a foodie, a definitely chef caliber when it comes to food preparation, which we're going to have to get a chef on the show at some point, Holly, for you to converse with. Yeah,
we are.
Somebody that's on that in that sphere. So that is too awesome. But let's see here. Looking over here, just checking in on this. Do we have anything coming from the chat room to announce? Do you have anything in there in the chat room to announce?
We got Mary in there. We got Miss Sandy in there. Sandy says congrats.
Yep.
Okay.
Congrats to Beth.
Moon said he'll be the guest of honor.
He's gonna be doing some guest of honor stuff one day. He's got that kind of talent. I'm telling you, he's one to watch, most definitely.
Oh, Sandy's asking how many books that Dr. Vic has released so far.
Well, we're gonna get into that as soon as he calls in. Yeah, I'm actually and we're supposed to get a call in. We're supposed to have him on the phone here in a minute. So, or should have about a minute ago, actually. So he'll be calling in,
I'm sure. He will, because he hasn't forgot.
He
I will find him.
No, just talk to him. just like in the past, less than the past day. So, we do make sure our guests are aware of the shows. Don't worry, folks.
I'm going to hunt him down. Maybe like, Vic, you realize it's that time, darling.
It's that time. It's that hour. So, but in the meantime, yes. Yeah, I wish I did have a whole bunch of.
Hey, how's your writing been going? Talk about what you're doing.
Mine has been, just loading up the pipeline and putting more and more books into this pipeline that are waiting to get through the editing phase. But it's been going good. I got, I'm finishing up. I got done with the main draft of a new Ragnar Stormbringer novel, which is tentatively titled Where Mountains Rise. Of course, I think I'd spoken on that before on here, and I'm on the verge of finishing a new Hong V Shadowwalker tale, and that one grew to be a small novel. And so that's kind of a little bit of a surprise for you all. This is a bit of a scoop. I'll go ahead and share it with you. Bit of a scoop. The working title is As Above, So Below. And it's a provocative title. Yes, I know, because you've heard that probably phrase before. But once you read the book, you'll see how it's used in this particular book, as it draws upon some Hopi and ancestral Puebloan lore and gets into the deep dives and some of that stuff. And definitely it's a pretty good thrill ride of an adventure to get you into an entirely different setting than the Ragnar stuff. And I think people are really going to enjoy it. It definitely has a lot of dark edges, dark fantasy, maybe a little sprinkling of horror elements. Definitely thriller elements, a little bit of mystery, all wrapped up in a little bit of fantasy. So yeah, I love it. I love how it's unfurling, and I'm only a few days away from finishing the draft on that. And it does look like, we do have our call in now. So yes, I'm going to go into the grand introduction. And tonight, very honored to bring you tonight's guest. Tonight's guest is a dear friend of both myself and Holly. Also has a PhD and is an investor and entrepreneur under the name of Dr. Vic. He's also a children's book author with several titles in print and two more coming out this holiday season. And as if that's not enough, recently he released his debut novel, Under the Gaze of Ganesh. And so welcoming onto the show, it's my honor and definitely excited to introduce to you tonight the one, the only, Victor Enocker. Vic, you're some, I
hey,
hope your mic is on.
Me.
There
yeah.
he is.
Can you guys hear? You got me?
One. Yes, absolutely.
You hear
me yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Yep.
Okay,
good. You sound good. Sound good. We got an active chat room listening to you tonight, and of course it's just me, you, Holly, and Beck, and having a conversation about a lot of cool things. Which, of course, the main thing, of course, is your brand new novel, which was your debut, Under the Gaze of Ganesh, which got released right around the time of Imaginarium, and is starting to gain some readers, and very excited to get into this because you and Holly worked closely on this one because Holly served as your editor. And so I know Holly wants to go on some deep dives with you about the book and some of the things behind it because just the way – I think it's an amazing book. I mean, I love how you blended genres in it. You brought in some of your own story and family history into it. It's a very, very fascinating book. It gets into, the culture of India and you know, definitely some of the pantheon with the faith there. And it's just amazing, just how you wove all these different things together in this book. And Holly, she was loving it, when she was working on it with you. And Holly, you want to make ask Vic the first question about it and make some comments?
I told Vic he has invented a new genre. It would be alternate biography because you know how we got alternate history. Well, this is an alternate biography we'll get into, listeners. But it sort of is a biography, self-written, but it's also got a fantastical element, which is really intriguing, and I think people are really going to enjoy this.
But yes,
I definitely
so where do you
like
want to start, Holly?
It was its own style, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead,
yeah,
Vic. Yeah, comment on that.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I hadn't seen that kind of style before anywhere, and it was just kind of going with the, the more of the folklore, and then kind of describing what the actual story was in the past, but then kind of showing how it was kind of more contemporary. I try to write it more like in today's time, how it would be also, how it kind of like extend from that. So I found that kind of interesting. I hadn't seen that done anywhere else.
No, I haven't either. I've not ever read a book like it. And you draw some other stuff in about history and racism. Mm-hmm. And, you draw some other hot topics into the book and weave it in. And it's fascinating, even trafficking, human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And all that was weaved into this. So it's quite fascinating. But, if you would tell the listeners, just give them a little tidbit of an overview, a synopsis, if you will. We don't want to do spoilers, but give them a synopsis of what it's about, what the premise is around the whole story idea.
It's basically around an Indian-American, well, now Indian-American, but an Indian family, I should say, and kind of their progression, I guess, as they kind of get older and kind of moved across the world, because that's very common with Indian people. They call it diaspora Indians, where a lot of Indian people are actually not, they're Indian, but they were never in India. And that was something with my dad. My dad is Indian, but he was born in Africa. And that's happened with a lot of Indian people. And that's why our book actually starts, it actually starts off in Africa, in Uganda. My dad, he lived in Kenya, but I went with Uganda in the book because that was when Idi Amin was in charge, and he kicked out all of the Asians, which included Indian people, and then they had to leave, and they disseminated to different parts of the world, and a lot of them came to America. And I actually explain about why you'll often see Indian people that they own hotels or motels. And the book actually explains how that happened, how that came about. But the book itself is about, like we said, an Indian family. And ultimately they grow up in Africa. Then they actually stop into London, into England for a little while, and then eventually move to America. And the majority of it that happens in America where they grow up. And we talk about a lot about the nuances with an Indian family coming to, say, actually Kentucky and learning about the culture. And that's where I try to really kind of engulf the reader and get their attention about the differences. But I try not to make it sound like too unwelcoming, because when we came to America, everybody was actually very friendly. Everyone's really nice. As compared to what you would think now if you watch the news and other things like that. But basically what happens is in the family, the brother and sister grow up and they have a really close bond, and there's an Indian holiday called Raksha Bandhan about where the brother has to acknowledge his sister and how important she is to him and to the family. And it's a very important ceremony that happens once a year in Indian culture. And I tried to build off of that to show their strong bond. And what happens when they get older, basically the guy's sister marries a guy from, they're both in med school, and he's just not a very nice guy at all. And his mother doesn't like her very much. And they order an Indian divorce. And if you'll notice, a lot of people will see, like in India, the divorce rate is very, very low. And it's actually one of the best rates in the world. It's really high. Like to stay married is very high over there. And basically this guy's mother-in-law and and she doesn't get along with his sister, and she orders an Indian divorce, which is basically where the groom ties the woman to a bed and sets her on fire. And basically the main character gets wind of that. And he's like, I've got to stop that from happening. And he confronts his brother-in-law, and they get into a fight. And the main guy winds up drowning. And ultimately, he prays and everything. And eventually, he's able to harness the powers of Ganesh. Not the complete powers, of course, but somewhat more like a demigod, a Ganesh light, if you will. And he basically helps out his sister, and I try not to get into too many details, but then he winds up being on the run, and then like part two is about him fleeing Kentucky and going through the South. He goes to Alabama and meets a guy that he knows. Then they go to Mexico, kind of the border of El Paso and Juarez, and they go through there, and then they just start – a lot of it is about Mexico, actually, which is surprising. You learn a lot about Mexico, and they go from basically getting – from there, and then they sail off from Mexico to India. And then there's a backstory about the main character's grandmother, and you find out that she could harness the powers of Kali, like in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Kali. And basically, you learn about that backstory, and when they arrive in India, it all kind of comes together, and they have their final kind of fight in India. So it's pretty interesting. I think people are really liking it. It's a lot of action, and people are saying it's a page turner. They say it's pretty intense, actually. I'm glad.
It is. Yeah. It's action packed, and it's for anybody. It isn't just like female readers like it, male readers like it, or everybody's gonna like it. It's for everyone, and I love the way that you add tidbits in, not going overboard, to explain that are going on, or some of the references for those people that may not understand Indian history, culture as well. So listeners, don't think you have to be an expert on Indian culture to read this book, because you do not. Victor did very good at explaining things and even add in some history in there so you could get a better view, which I really appreciate it. And
I really enjoyed Forrest Gump, where they intertwine the history in it. And I think that's what made it so interesting and captivating. And I really kind of want to go with that a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of horror elements too. It's parts of it are written almost like a Stephen King book, in certain parts.
Yeah.
I think. A few people have had to put it down. A few people couldn't read parts of it. I've been hearing.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all
it
over
gets
the place.
Intense.
Which. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it gets very,
this is a question, for Vic on
sure.
the structure choice, because one thing that I noticed that helped you get around the classic info dump problem is that you used a very classic literary technique of having a narrative character, a narrator character,
mm-hmm.
That comes in. And in the formatting of the book, it's really easy because those sections are, you know, italicized and the others
mm-hmm.
are not. So it's really easy for the reader to see, you know, when the narrator, you know, is in and when the narrator is out. Talk to us a little bit about that particular choice in writing the book and what, you know, how you got to the decision to use that technique.
Well, it's a great technique because otherwise I'd have just gone through and have written something and just had to explain it somehow. Because even me being Indian American, and I'm really like, and I always try to stay up on a lot of the folklore and things like that. But I mean, I learned a lot myself writing the book. And I mean, anybody, even if you're very familiar with Indian culture, you're still going to learn a lot. And, the narrator choice was fun because I made it Ganesh's brother, Kartikeya. And Ganesh, of course, is the elephant god. Kartikeya is more of a regular-looking, like, really handsome guy. He's a god of warfare. And I always kind of incorporate a brotherly rivalry in the narration because he's always jealous. Like, Ganesh is the famous one and gets all the attention. And he'll always talk about, like, I'm the handsome one and all this stuff. And my parents, you know, the parents like him better and all this kind of stuff. So it was really fun to do that because you could put your own spin on your narrator. But it worked out really well, and it worked through very cleanly, I thought. And the book almost at times can almost read like a travel guide, too. It's really different. I didn't know if people would like it or hate it, but I knew that at the worst, they'd be like, I've never read anything quite like that. And I really appreciate being on 7-Star because I feel like you guys are a lot more open for things like that compared to like maybe a more traditional press that would tell me how to write something and what exactly they want,
right.
which I really appreciate you guys because you're like, just go for it, you know?
Yeah, you got to keep the voice.
Saying. You got to keep your voice, maintain the author's voice, you know, reel you in here and there. But yeah, you've got to maintain the author's voice, and that is so important. And this was one of my favorite, my most favorite books to edit. I really enjoyed this one. I really did. I had to stop and look up a few things from time to time just to do some fact-checking. But, yeah, it was – I did find – and I learned so much. I really did. I did not know about the whole – the racism like it was, you know,
in the 80s,
the 80s, yeah.
The group Dot Busters in New Jersey, they would just attack anyone who appeared to be Indian,
nothing about that. Would you tell people about that, what happened? Because I know I'm not the only one that doesn't know.
It was basically in New Jersey. And basically the Indian, I guess, immigrants were coming and they were taking, like, you know, they were doctors and engineers and they were taking all these high-paying jobs and just basically the community didn't like it. So they would wait till, I believe, sundown, and they were called the Dot Busters, like Ghostbusters at the time. And they would try to find anyone who was wearing a bindi or appeared Indian and they would just attack them. And then eventually, you know, the police they caught on. And they started, you know, just kind of watching. And now it's such a big turnaround and that, like, now they have their own Diwali celebrations every year. And I think there's, like, a park dedicated to Indian people, something. It's pretty wild how quickly it turned around. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a, I had a main character who left New Jersey and came here, and that was a reasoning why he left.
Well, that would have been a reason. Yeah, I had never heard of it, and I actually looked into it more and, you know, did myself a history lesson. But, yeah, I mean, just horrible. And, you know, we think of the 80s. I know especially Steve's always like, oh, well, you know, the social climate wasn't as bad back in the 80s, and maybe not, but a lot of stuff went on that didn't know about. We didn't have the internet, right? So, you know, if we didn't hear it on the news or read it in the newspaper, then it didn't happen. You know, we didn't know about it. There was no way for us to know. And so, you know, now our world's a little smaller, and, you know, we hear at first bad thing that goes on, we hear about it. You know, somebody.
It's wild. I think that's right. You're just wondering, was it ignorance was ignorance bliss basically back then? You know, it's wild.
Exactly.
Do we just know more now? Yeah.
That's it. We know that all that existed, and we're like, well, we've got to do better than that, than things that were going on then. Yeah, that was just. It just blows my mind. It still does. It still blows my mind because that wasn't that far, you know, too far removed from now. I mean, yeah, it was, you know, a few decades, but it's still not, it's not like 100 years ago. This was more recent, you know, when you think about it. And it's just tragic. I mean, you know, like they did with the Irish, when the Irish first immigrated over, you know, and New York, they were terrible to the Irish. But that was over 100 years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Irish and Italian,
Yes. But that goes back a long time. But, the whole thing with the dot hunters, it blows my mind that it was, you know, that was in history. And
I do want
God
to mention,
that, you know.
I do want to mention to everyone kind of who's listening right now that – there is mention of racism in the book, but I don't cover a lot of racism or anything like that. And over the majority of it, like when they come to the South, I really kind of praise the Southerners for accepting them and stuff like that. So I just, you see it all too much in the media now, I think racism, and it's just stressful, you know, and I wanted to make this book entertaining and you don't have to really, you know, I do mention it cause I feel like
I have to,
but I didn't,
I didn't stress it,
you know? I didn't stress it, and I want to also emphasize that it's not. There is a lot of Indian folklore, and there is elements of religion, but it's not a religious book. Like I don't really talk about religion, but I do talk about the folklore, maybe religious figures, but it's not a. I don't want people to get confused because it is called Under the Gaze of Ganesh, but it's not a religious book in any way.
Right.
So.
Well, I think it's great because in fantasy literature, I mean, we obviously see a lot of stories that draw from like the Greek pantheon or the Roman gods or the Norse gods or the other faiths, you know, the draw from the Christian faith. And I think it's because there's not an overabundance of books in speculative fiction that have drawn off of the Hindu faith. And some of the amazing figures that are there. I have, you know, read a lot about the various gods and there are a lot of them in the Hindu faith. I mean, literally like thousands.
Like 5,000.
So out of that large sphere, I am curious to know how you made your choices of the ones that are featured in this book, because you had a lot to draw from. And, you know, how did you come about picking, for instance, Ganesh as a main figure, or Kali, or, you know, those kinds of figures, give us some of the choices there, background on that.
Ganesh, I guess Ganesh, you can find the most kind of literature on him. I guess he's one of the popular gods. And for me, I guess, I didn't stress it in the book a lot. I do mention it, but it's very important in Indian culture, like astrology, like when you're born. And when you're born, you have a certain god associated with your birthday. Or like, you know, like you have a horoscope and you have your certain sign. It's almost like that. So Ganesh is the one associated with me. And where he's technically, and I talk about it in the book a lot, the remover of obstacles. and any obstacles you have in your life, you could pray to Ganesh, and he'll help you overcome them. But Ganesh, basically, there was a lot of information about him. And I do mention in the book, my main character gets a Ganesh tattoo on his forearm, and that his grandmother had one also. And that was one reason. That actually happened in my family. My grandmother has a Ganesh tattoo on her forearm that was done with a old school needle. Not like I had mine done with an electric needle. I think she had the one where you take the needle and you hit it like you with a hammer or whatever and do it slowly.
Yes.
So that's pretty hardcore.
Wow.
That's pretty wild, man. When your grandma shows you her forearm tattoo, and I'm like, wow. So like, I have one. I have a Ganesh tattoo, and that was in tribute to her. And Ganesh
awesome.
Overall, there was just more literature on him and a lot of the folklore, mm-hmm. and I just found it easier to kind of weave in and out with a lot of the just cultural aspects of Kentucky and Mexico and India and everywhere they go. And then the follow-up book is actually about Hanuman, who is the monkey god. And I'd always just been kind of interested in Hanuman. There was a lot less information on him than Ganesh, and but I wanted to cover him. And that's the follow-up, which is done now. It's going to be edited very soon. But the follow-up is finished, and it's my main character's daughter. When she's born, after a while, she's able to capture the essence of Hanuman, the monkey god, when she needs to. It manifests when it needs to. But I've been finding that lately, like you were talking about the Greek pantheon and everything. Apparently, in India now, a lot of stories are coming out about the gods, just like they're doing over here with the Greek gods and Roman gods. And it's really popular. There's actually a movie about Hanuman coming out, I want to say in 1 or 2 months, a big blockbuster movie. And over there, his name is Hanuman. They call him Hanuman. Apparently, that's the way they say it now. But yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. I'm really glad to have done it when I did, because I hopefully can kind of anchor, keep my spot, you know, established early with stuff like that. But I think it would be very interesting for a streaming network to cover, because you could just cover so many audiences with this information, with this intellectual property or such.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
Holly talked about that to me, about the potential of it for streaming movies. And Holly, I know you did. You thought that too, because I remember talking to you about that.
Oh, it would make a fantastic television series. I mean, it would just be, there's so much wrapped up into it that, you know, you couldn't just cover it with one movie. It'd have to be multiple, or it'd have to be a series. You know, there's just so many angles and different characters. And, you know, you did your B characters justice. We always say, you know, don't forget your side characters. Sometimes they take a forefront, you know. And, yours did in a big way. I mean, your B characters, you know, went through character development, went through trials and tribulations and, you know, had things go on too. So yeah, you get attached to them and you know, feel for them too. So yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a sign, I think, of a strong novel is when, you know, you have the strong and compelling secondary characters. They're not there just to fill space, but they have an important part in the story and the arc, and they have their own arc often. And that's always the hallmark of a really good novel is you know, the strong ensemble that's behind, you know, your protagonist. And that's definitely something that's in Vic's book. And it's just such a crossover kind of appeal, because it has so many genres kind of blended into it. And that's what I think makes it very, very unique is a kind of that's got that blend of, and works. Yeah, it brings together quite a few genres, I think. Yeah, cause Holly and I were trying to count them all out. we got through quite a few. There's a lot of genres.
I'm like, oh, this, I just loved it so much. And Yeah, I would come out of editing session and telling, oh, Steve, and I know he got tired of hearing it, but I was telling him.
No, I did. I loved hearing it.
It was like it's phenomenal, you know, and the different dynamics that were going on. And I just love it. I love the whole alternate biography thing. If you would explain a little bit about your background, I think you touched on a little bit, but the similarities between you and this book, you know, why it makes it like an alternate biography.
Yeah, I probably was a little too on the nose with some of the things. Like the main character's name is Vikram, and I go by Victor. So I was like, that was pretty close. But, I mean, everybody knows, you know, that I'm writing about myself, even if I, you know, I didn't admit it.
Right.
But I think that happens a lot. You know, this was my first novel, and it's like at the end of The Wizard of Oz, basically, when she wakes up, and she's like, you were there, and you were there. You know, even if you don't realize you're doing it, you put your own life into it so much, even if you're really trying not to. It's just amazing how psychological that very first, you know, thing you write, that you write is, and how much of your own life you put into it. But a lot of it is my experience growing up, I guess being Indian American and growing up in the South, and some discrepancies and the cultures and things like that. But everything is good. I mean, nothing bad ever really happens. But a lot of the stuff, I think even I write about the food in the different places, but a lot of it, I was always wondering how it would catch on. I talk about them trying to mix the culture of the foods together, like Indian food with traditional kind of Southern American food. And I think that would be real interesting. I've always thought about starting a food truck or a restaurant with, I guess you call it a fusion restaurant, where you have a fusion between Indian food and Southern American food. I think that could be really interesting.
I'm all over it, Vic. You need help.
Yep.
I'm all over it.
We might have to try some
blending. Love it.
Holly, you're going to get your conversation tonight. Vic, we were just talking about this before you called. We're like, we're going to have somebody call. Let's going to talk about, you know, a chef or a foodie to talk about that kind of thing, because Holly's just, you know, that's a big thing with her. And here you are, Vic. You've given her the opportunity now.
I tell you what, Holly, we might have to try a few recipes. And then wouldn't that be wild if we made a cookbook out of the novel? We also made a companion
that
cookbook.
Would be
that'd be hilarious. I've never heard of that.
Oh, my God.
Nothing more
original. I'm not either. That would be so much fun.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
I'll look into it. We'll talk about it.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, she'd be up for that. I know Holly.
Yeah, you're going to get my wheels turning now. I'm going to be I'm going to be doing some research.
That's hilarious. The first cookbook on Seven Star Press. That's hilarious, man. That's awesome.
That would be something. Oh, my God. But, hey, you know, the crazy things lead to, you know, big things, so, right? So, yeah, it's a no idea. Should be left
ganache,
unexplored.
Ganache pudding, ganache.
Ganache
butter chicken, you know. I love it.
Oh,
tandoori fried chicken, maybe. Something like a curry chicken and dumplings.
Oh, my God.
Mango sweet tea.
Oh, my God. Well, Beck, you're going to be eating some weird stuff here soon, because I'm going to come up with some good cocktails. Always eat your weird stuff. That's true. I do. I make this thing now. Steve keeps saying we need to do a food truck. It's a Mexican spaghetti, and it's delicious. Mm-hmm. Taco spaghetti.
Yep, she blended. She blended the two together, and it's
the way
she combined it. It's phenomenal. I mean, and you could customize it 100 ways, and it's amazing.
Yep.
I mean, it just blew me away when she did it. But yeah, it's a perfect balance between the two realms, you know, the spaghetti realm and then the Mexican food as well. So yeah, Holly's the person, definitely would be the person to talk to. She would definitely have the right kind of approach to blend two realms. Yeah, as far as like Indian food and Southern food.
The moon is in the chat, and he says waffles, and I said, ooh, curry chicken and waffles. That sounds great.
So we're going to have a truck that's a food truck and sell books. So we'll have the first bookmobile food truck hybrid.
I love where this is going.
Last food truck.
Dr. Vic's
love
Read
it.
And Eat.
Oh,
Dr. Vic's Read and Eat.
Reads
that
and
would
eat.
Be great.
Ends
oh, that would be good. Yeah. That would be too good.
Everybody's books will smell like curry when they get them. It'll be horrible. That's funny.
Oh, that could be. You never know. It could. It could be a
curry.
Blockbuster idea.
It could be. You know,
too.
Your podcast.
I do as well.
It's going to be changed. Your podcast is everyone's going to talk more about food from now on. Hey, Tom, talk more about food.
Right.
That's right. Yep. Hey, I'm all for it. We talking food.
Yep.
I'm ready. You got my wheels turning now.
Yep. So everybody who comes
on
to talk now will have to bring their own recipe, too, when they come to talk on the podcast.
There you go. Come chat, bring a recipe.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This is good. But, Holly, you were getting into Vic's own background because he has an amazing background, and including a PhD, I might add. Yeah, you definitely kudos to you on that because you worked very hard on that. I was around for that time. Yeah, you definitely worked hard on that thesis and everything. But you've had quite the adventure yourself, and I think it's great that you did, as Holly said, kind of like an alternative biography, like an alt history book in a way, and did a homage to, you know, some of your own heritage in this and your own history, family history. I think it's awesome that you wove that in because you write what you know, you write what comes out of the heart, and that's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why it rings authentic because it's coming from the right place.
Well, I'd like to ask you, Vic, what did you find that was more difficult or less difficult in the comparison between writing your thesis and writing prose?
Enough.
Okay, good. Basically, I think it's very common for people who do academic writing, like a dissertation or thesis. A lot of times, and this was me, I felt like I had lost my voice because you have to write so academically, and it's very bland and just factual. You know, and I knew when I got done that I felt like I had changed, you know, my style, because you just basically get it beat out of you to be like, no, do this, do this, do this. And you're going to do it because at that point you've been in school for so long that you have to, you feel like you have to graduate, you know, and you'll just do whatever. But I really enjoy, you know, coming back and finding my voice again as a writer. But for me, a lot of it was dialogue because you know, academically you never write any dialogue, and then it's to put dialogue in, and then you read your own dialogue and you're like, you know, you're like, no one would say that in actual life, you know, like you have to reword it to like, you know, like someone would actually say, and then you have to follow that, you know, maybe if you don't leave necessarily clues in the other writing, you leave it in dialogue. So when they were talking about this, this is what came up later. Oh, that's what they meant. You know, that some things like that. But it was definitely dialogue. Other than that, from writing academically, I guess I just done so many statistics and numbers. And, you know, you don't have to worry about that when you write a novel, really. But it was similar in that I did look up a lot of information. There was a lot of academic research in the novel. Anyone who reads it will definitely see that there was. But I did enjoy getting to do this, and then, like I said, finding my voice again, and I do appreciate that very much.
Well, and the difference between that and academic writing is here you get to have fun with your imagination.
Yeah.
You get to add your fantastical elements. You get to be creative, you know. When you're writing like your thesis, you have to be, you know, on the nose to the point. You got to have accuracy. You don't add fantastical elements, or, you know, you can't get uber creative, you know. And so I think with the novel writing, yeah, I mean, you really got to spread your wings, you know?
Mm-hmm. You could be fantastical. I mean, that's what you should. Nobody wants just, you know, that you go, somebody goes and does this and nothing happened and it was all routine. You know, it should be just crazy. That's what people want to read, you know? Just weird things mm-hmm. happening.
Yeah, watching it from the outside when you and Holly were working together, I remember many conversations I'd hear from Holly where she talked about that very thing that she had, you know, had some talks with you or discussions with you about, you know, breaking from the academic mind to prose mind, and I remember mm-hmm. Holly talking a bit about that back then as you were kind of getting more comfortable with, you know, just not feeling like, you know, in that type of, I guess, format of a thesis
mm-hmm.
and getting right. into more of the creative writing aspect of prose mm-hmm. and narrative fiction. I remember you guys talking a fair amount about that, if I'm not mistaken, Holly.
Yeah, I'm like, don't be afraid of it. Let your freak flag fly, you know?
I'm like,
just hope that, let it go, you know? And I think you had a lot of fun with this. I really do.
I did. I really did.
Yeah, I feel that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I had fun working with you on it. I love it. I just love being your editor. Please don't ever fire me.
I was really glad to have you as an editor. I was really glad to have you as an editor because, you know, you're very open to other cultures, other aspects, you know, things like that. And you really appreciate just, you know, being different during, like this is very original. I think, like, everybody's
correct.
Really happy about that. You know, some people are like, this isn't like everything I've ever read before, you know. But it's like, no.
Right.
I think people are really looking for things that are different. And this definitely has a lot of diversity and adversity in the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm really wondering, you know, I know everybody who writes a novel or any kind of major work wants to be turned into, you know, a TV series or a movie. But I really, really could see it as a TV series. And almost everybody mm-hmm. who's read the book is like, it would be a phenomenal TV series, has told me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, most certainly.
If it ever is taken to TV or the big screen, my premise, I would like it to be almost like Roots, not quite as heavy of a topic, but where Roots had a lot of the predominant black actors at the time. And now if you look back at that lineup, all those actors are phenomenal actors. You're just like, they were all in miniseries. I would like it to be like that for
amazing.
I'd like it to be like that for Indian actors if it ever did go on screen, where we just get like all the top Indian actors together and kind of showcase the talent. Because mm-hmm. you're seeing it a lot more Indian actors in Hollywood now on TV and in movies.
Oh, mm-hmm. Malik, that did Freddie in The Queen, the Bohemian mm-hmm. Rhapsody. Oh. He played Freddie just to a T. I mean, you'd forget sometimes you were not seeing Freddie. You know, it was just amazing. And, yeah, Malik's just phenomenal. And, I mean, there's tons of Bollywood movies. There's tons of phenomenal mm-hmm. Indian actors, mm-hmm. Comedians, you know, out there that could definitely play these parts. I mean, yeah, 100%.
I was going to say, the productions coming out of India are just phenomenal. And, I mean, they have some epic fantasy films that have come out in the past year that are just mind-blowing. And there's definitely – Vic would have a lot of options when he gets the casting, the TV show.
Well, let me ask you, since all authors, Vic, have in their head mm-hmm. who they'd like to see play their characters, who would you like to see play like your sister's character in this, you know, your loosely based sister character, or your father and mother characters. Who would you like to see play those?
Sister, I don't know the actress's name. Like, I could actually look on my phone. Give me a sec. There was a show on Netflix produced by Mindy Kaling called Never Have I Ever.
I watched that show. Vixen loved that show so much. I love that show.
She would be phenomenal.
She's
and
so
then
good. I forget her name, but God, I love that little actress.
Yep.
I'm going to look her up.
Maitreyi Ramakrishna. Ramakrishnan. Yeah, she's good.
Yes.
And then there's also another show.
What was she in? Doggone it. I can't think of what I watched she was in. Well, the one that played this sister, the older sister, in Never Have I Ever.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Or was she a cousin?
Would be...
She was a cousin, but she was like
the
older
cousin,
sister
yep.
figure.
Yep, mm-hmm.
yep.
She would
was
be good.
Good.
There is an actress on the show called Miracle Workers.
Wait.
Here it is.
Yeah.
Geraldine Vishwanathan, yep.
Vishwa. The one that
yep.
played, I'm going to butcher these names, Vic, forgive me. But the one that played Kamla, her name was Richa Morjani.
Uh-huh.
Richa Morjani. And the one that played Debbie in Never Have I Ever is, oh, man, I'm going to butcher that, Maitreyi Ramakrishnan. Yeah.
No, I got you. Yeah.
And then
Puma, there's a lot of talent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had so many in this one. It was just phenomenal. It's a great series. I'm telling everybody, if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's really cute. It's really good.
And then there's a flashback in the book where we talk about Kali. I'd like Freda Pinto and Dev Patel. I would love to have both of them because they're actually married in real life, and they would play the grandparents of the main character. The grandparents. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of people now. The main guy from Ghost, the show Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Mindy Kaling. I'd love to have Mindy Kaling involved in any capacity.
That'd be fun.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of options. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That'd be fun. I'd love to see it get to that point for sure. But what'd you think, Vic, finishing the debut? What was it like completing the novel? Because that's always like a very unique experience for authors.
Yeah, I wanted to tell people about that. Well, I went by, I guess, I listened to your podcast 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, the one about writing prompts and just creative writing in general.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really good. And you thought about everybody is different, you know. And for me, you know, some people, I went by word count because I knew 60,000 words is officially a novel. And it was just, it's very intimidating at first. And I blew way past it. I think the first novel was 142,000 words. I more than doubled it. But I was just very intimidated that I would get to maybe 50 or 55 and have written everything I could possibly think of and be like, oh, I'm so close, you know. But if you really sit down and you kind of make an outline and you know, where you want to start and where you want to end, and it's just filling out everything in the middle, and it's really not that bad. I think a lot of it is romanticized in movies and in TV, and it's just somebody, you know, sitting in a room, and they're always like on a typewriter or some kind of word processor, maybe a laptop now. And it's, you know, writing as much as you can. And it's just, I don't know, people, like, you don't have to write every day. You know, like, there were plenty of days I just researched. I didn't write. Or I wrote a lot more on one day compared to another day, things like that. But getting done, I mean, really, when I hit that 60,000-word mark, I was just so relieved. You know, and then I knew, like, when Holly was editing, she could have took out over half the book, and I would have still had enough. you know, to be considered a novel. And I was always in the mindset I would rather have to take things out than have to try to come up with things to put in there. So it's a great feeling though to be done. There's people who go through their whole lives talking about that they want to write a novel and they never do it. But you know, I didn't find it as bad as I thought it would be. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing
exactly.
It. You know, it's really
exactly.
It's not that bad. And now there are so many more tools for the average person to use, like online and things like that, especially the chat bots, things like that, to get ideas and whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you like this, like with Stephen, was your first novel was Swordbearer?
No, The Exodus Gate was the first published novel.
The Exodus Gate. Yes, yeah. I remember that
mm-hmm.
now. The Exodus Gate. And this was, and what was that, almost 20 years ago?
2009. A little shorter than that, 2009 was when that was released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known Stephen for a long time, and I remember you coming out with a novel. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, someone I know has a novel. I want to do that. You know, it's just a lot of times just knowing somebody who's done it. Because I'm already hearing from people who are like, I know two people have already started writing theirs. They're like, you know, you did it, and I think I can do it. I'm like, yeah, of course you can. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
For things like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because it's something I hammer on the show, is that you just have to sit down and do the work and just write consistently. You will finish it. Just keep at it. And that's it's not insurmountable. I mean, everybody can write a story, and it's just so frustrating to see people get so deterred from that. They, you know, get worked up about it and they don't even start. But yeah, it's the kudos on bringing that up, because that's the key, is sitting down and doing it.
And for me, a lot of it was, I had to really tell myself that it doesn't have to be perfect the first time you write it. You know, everything can change. You can constantly change it. It's fine. It's just, you know, get everything down and then go back through and just, you can change whatever you want. You know, it's just like I said, everything doesn't have to be perfect the first time. And that's okay.
Exactly.
But you have something down. And, you know, as long as you know kind of what direction you want to go into, you're pretty good. You're fine.
Exactly.
In the chat room, I'm like, I feel so called out. I know. Practice what I preach. I know. I will say the great Michael Moss is in there, too. But, yes, I've had this children's series, which I know I've told everybody about forever. And I am terrible about just getting the pen going and just setting time to do it, you know. I got so many different things going on, pulled in six different directions, and it's just I have to make the time, you know. Quit playing the fake tin.
Chip away at
my
it.
Breaks on the phone, taking care of the panda, and actually, you know,
that's my job though.
See the work. it's hard.
That's true.
It is hard, you know. It's intimidating. It's hard because, like you said, Vic. And Stephen knows it well, too. You pour yourself out. You bare your soul when you put out these children of yours, these ages, this stuff you've written. You know, you are burying yourself to criticism. You're opening yourself to all that.
Mm-hmm.
The criticism, and not all of it's constructive. Some of it's just brutal because there's assholes in the world, as we know, and they don't have, you know, it's hard to please everybody, and some people are just not good at criticism, even in reviews, or they'll blame you stuff that Amazon had did by a damaged book or something, and they'll give you like a one-star review will pop up, and you'll be like, well, why do I got a one-star review? You know, it don't even make sense, and then you'll look and see, oh, the book arrived damaged, or was left out in the rain by a delivery man, or, you know, and then you've got that on you.
Yeah, get a one-star review. All right.
It's silly things like that. It just angers you, but you've got to learn to look past some of the negative criticism, because not everybody's going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not everybody's cup of tea. It's not, you know, and you've got to learn to get a thick skin and mm-hmm. and look past, you know, a lot of that. But you just got to be proud of what you put out and back it 100% and believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you'll get through it.
That's
Vic
for me,
made
that's
another important point.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, so oh no, sorry, Vic. I was just going to say real quick.
No, I was
going to
say,
wanted to point out
for me. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Vic. Sorry about that, man.
Well, I was going to say having Holly as an editor was beneficial to me because I'm like, she's going to tell me straight. I knew that. I was like, if it's bad, she's going to tell me. You know, she's not going to be like, let's still come, you know, put it out, because you really doubt yourself as you keep writing. That, and I saw it with when I wrote my dissertation mm-hmm. in graduate school also. Everyone who writes their own dissertation said, oh, it's horrible, I hate it, whatever. And, you know, someone else reads it, and they're like, it's great, it's fine. You know, you always get down on your own work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really like having Holly as an editor, because, you know, she would tell me straight. We never had any issues or anything, really. But
no.
I trusted in her, because, like, you just don't know. Like you said, you don't know how you're going to get if it's going to get accepted or what the response is going to be. You just don't have any idea. Like you said, you just have to put it out there
right.
and see what happens. That's all you can do.
When you want someone that is going to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not just going to, you know, blow smoke up your butt. You want somebody
yeah.
that's going to be honest, going to be critical, going to be like, hey, if you change this, you know, it sounds a little better than this, or you don't need this. This is fluff. You know, you don't need that. Or, you know, and cutting things. And yeah, it hurts because you're like, oh, man, but I put all that in. But it is a critical eye. You need that other pair of eyes on there. That's what I say about the AI. You know, as far as, like, you have Google Edits. You have Grammarly out there. But without that pair of human eyes that's doing the editing, you cannot truly get a full edit or get that criticism that you need from a human perspective. So that's why AI will never, I don't care how good they get, or they're never going to replace a pair of human eyes as far as editing, because you can't install that into a computer to be, you know, emotional about this or how they feel about this or how they feel about that. You need the human aspect,
mm-hmm.
and
well,
I didn't
nuances
lose that. You need
it
that.
Misses nuances
yeah.
a lot, and especially the automated
yes,
stuff
do.
Misses a lot of nuance
so,
and
yep.
detail, and word
yeah,
choice.
Yeah, and it'll
and,
let you misspell words because they're spelt right, like here, which, there, you know,
yep.
things that are spelt different. It just is over, and names. You know, like your characters' names and stuff like that. Well, not, you know, sometimes you'll spell them with an extra vowel or you'll have a typo and scan right over it. That's why you have to have that human pair of eyes, and you have to have somebody that can sit and talk with you
mm-hmm.
and that you can get feedback and you can bounce ideas off each other. Like, well, hey, you know, here's my opinion, which, you know, Vic, I always say that, you know, there's a lot of things I would say, this is my opinion. You know, it's not like it's incorrect, but in my opinion, I think it would be better if you'd done this or this or this, you know,
mm-hmm.
I never want
uh-huh.
to take the author's voice, you
right.
know.
Well, Vic had said something really important earlier, and I do want to circle back to it real quick, because he had said that, you know, the thing was, is he got to the point where he didn't worry about getting it perfect on the first draft. The important thing was to get it down, because he understood, and actually writing his first novel, he had a veteran author's approach, because he understood the important thing was to get it down on that first draft, because he understood the process would get it refined, the revisions, this the other passes that he would do, then working with an editor, that would get you know, anything that was unnecessary and need to be trimmed or culled, taken care of later. The important thing was just getting everything down on that first run, and I think that was a very good insight that I wanted to make sure got highlighted. And then that gets to, you know, what you're talking about, Holly, because, you know, in discussion with, you know, AI and things like that, I mean, yeah, deciding, you know, what does need to be, you know, trimmed a bit for pacing or culled or you know, revised a little bit, you know, to tighten things up or make things clearer. I mean, a human editor is definitely going to, I think, for a long time to come at least, excel in that area over like an AI type pass. Because those are different. Those areas I don't think an AI is good at yet. So, for my 2 cents there.
I agree. 100%. And you're not going to grow and learn unless you work with somebody that you got a good rapport with. You know, you have to work together. There's some editors that can't work with some authors and vice versa. You know, you're not going to get along with everybody, as we know, as adults, and you're not going to be able to work with everybody.
Yeah.
So when you find someone who you can work with that you know it's going to be honest, that's going to, you know, not blow smoke up your hiney, and that's going to be truthful with you and be like, hey, you know, rein this in or rein that in. I'm Steve's editor, too, so he knows this all too well. I am brutal.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes
to she's tough. She can be very tough, folks.
She's tough, but she's not mean, you know.
There's no mercy, but yeah, she does it in a constructive way, and it's when she talks, you know, things over. Yeah, it's not mean. Yeah, you're right. It's not mean. It's done with your best interest, and she'll point things out and give you the reasons. Mm-hmm.
I want you to put the best, because I know it bears your soul. I know it's your name, it's not mine, it's your name on the line, it's your words on the page, it's your story that you want to tell, you know, and I want it to be the best it can be. And any good editor, we've got Michael Nost in the chat room. Hello, Nost, he love you. He's one of the best editors out there. He knows, you know.
Oh, yeah, one of the best.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Our goal is to make you, that he said Holly cares, that's why, that's right. A good editor cares about their author, and they want them to do the best that they can. And, you know, if you don't have that in your editor, well, then I suggest getting a new editor, you know, because not everybody's going
to
get along.
But
you have to have that rapport, and you got to be able to bounce the ideas off each other and be able to work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. Makes a big difference with the outcome of the
book. I wanted to ask you, Holly. So since we've come up from the where everyone was in their house for COVID for so long, and I'm going to guess all of us, all the writers, all the authors on the press, we were all writing, I have to imagine, during that time. So you had a big influx, didn't you, probably fairly recently, of just stuff you're just having to read constantly right now, I would imagine. You're probably still trying to catch up, I would imagine.
Yes, because believe it or not, people were less productive during that time than any other time I have ever seen. And I think it's because we were all just exhausted. You know, we wasn't even putting out books because we didn't think it was fair to our authors. Because they couldn't do signings, you couldn't do public things, there was no use. You know, nobody was buying much. I mean, e-books, but that was about it. And so we didn't even think it was fair. So we didn't even publish a novel for a little while.
And we're
still playing catch-up.
Had to freeze.
We are still playing catch-up from that. And it's read.
Almost there.
I write regular books that I read on the side, and then I've got all this editing that's just piled up now. Steve's got several through the pipeline. I've got some other, you know, I'm doing one of Steve's right now. But, yeah, it's about overwhelming right now.
Yeah.
And
we're catching up.
It's great, though. Mm-hmm. I love to edit. I love to read. It's you know, I love the whole process. It's not that. It's just, I feel in 2020, it changed us all forever. And I look back now and I'm thinking, my God, I could have got my whole garage cleaned. I could have wrote all my 6 children's books that I had in my head. I could have wrote a novel. I could have wrote, you know, my autobiography that I wanted to write. you know, there's so many things that I look back and I'm like, man, we wasted so much time. What were we doing? That I don't know, other than binge watching and we were reading. You know, we read a lot. Me and Steve read on the back deck a lot during 2020 when it was pretty nice. Because we like to sit out there and read. I have wine. He has his bourbon, and we read. But, yeah, it's just we look back. It was a weird time. And we're all still trying to come to that and find the, you know, find our footing again. And, I mean, here we are in 2023. And we still have not caught up completely, but we're getting there. And every little progress is to be joyed, you know.
Yeah, I think 2023 is when live events really kicked back in gear, though, because there's a lot of reticence for people to go to live events. It didn't really kick fully in until this year. You really saw it at events across the country. This is the year where people really came out for live events. I mean, this year, and I've heard that from a lot of different event organizers and people holding live events. They all noticed that this year, people finally, you know, started coming back out again, and were hungry for live stuff. So that was good, and we saw that at Imaginarium this year too. But yeah, definitely, it took a while for people to get comfortable again with that, but. Yes.
Let me ask Holly.
Yeah, it's a process.
So where Holly was my editor, I got her a gift for editing my book. I got her some witch bells.
Tell him where those bells are right now.
Yeah. Where are they?
They hang right above my head, Vic. Right above my bed on my side. Right above my head. And you know, the witch bells, when bells ring, it deters evil spirits. Evil spirits do not like bells. And we have fans going. Steve has a big standing up fan on his side. I have a fan over here. So they move and they ching all the time. And actually got them down. Let me tell you what I did the other night, Vic. Back to vouch. He had that super full blue moon. So the first night it rose, I took all my crystals out, which those witch bells you got me, which thank you so much. I love them so much. They have crystals in little jars that's even on there. And so I took all my crystals and those witch bells, and I took them all outside so Luna, the lovely moon, could charge them with her positive energy. Mm-hmm. And then hung them back up. They're hanging back up right now.
So Steven is protected from glistening teenage vampires then with these bells.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Something like that.
Shimmering vampires. There's nothing Steven hates more than shimmering vampires.
He's just got the crude, vicious vampire that he sleeps next to every night. He's got me, you know.
Yeah, right.
I don't glisten.
No.
Not sparkle, but yes.
No sparkling, yeah.
But there is one thing I do want to mention. We didn't talk much about the kids' books, but the first kids' book I wrote, the inspiration was based off a photograph. Steven was in my crew of where we went for years. We went to Buffalo Wild Wings every Tuesday because they had a wing special. And we went for years and years. And towards the end of our time we were going there, we had a server named Danny. And she posted, we were friends and we're on Facebook, and she posted a picture of when she was younger, and she would grow sunflowers every year. And she took a picture and posted it with her stepping on a step stool with her flower because it was so tall. And, you know, and I thought, you know, as a little kid, anything that's taller than you is amazing. You know, and that's where the inspiration for the first kids' books came out. It was just called The Girl Who Grew a Sunflower Taller Than Herself. And it was just, you know, just a picture inspirational there. And in the novel, I write about Kali having a vahana or mount. Like every Hindu god has an animal associated with them. And Kali's is a lion or tiger. And it's a friend of the show's, Rose Marie, it's Machario.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had posted something on Facebook about tigers with melanism, where a tiger is all black. And I was like, that is so cool. I'm going to have my character, when she transforms into Kali, that's going to be her like her animal companion is going to be an all-black tiger. And I thought that fit in really well. So it's like, you never know when you inspire somebody, even, you know, by random posts, things like that. You never know what somebody will see and get inspiration from. So I just want to tell people, like, don't be afraid to put things out there. You know, you never know what someone sees and what they take from it. So.
That's absolutely my inspiration. I have to put inspirational posts out every day on Facebook, or I got people texting me asking me if I'm still alive. They get worried because they look for those posts, and it's true. I mean, you know, as writers, as creatives in general, you know, you listen to conversations in public. You watch people's different actions and different, you know, mannerisms, and that's what you include in your novels. I mean, it's part of human nature, and we are a little different, and so it's about the observation.
Yep, absolutely. And we're coming up on about 3 minutes left, so definitely give Vic a chance to tell folks where to find his books and also where to connect with him on what social media accounts that he'd like folks to follow him at.
You can find the book, I believe, at basically any major book outlet, Amazon,
yep.
Barnes & Noble. There's electronic in the print version. We should be working on an audio version very soon. I think it will take a while because it is a very long book, but we should start the audio version very soon. That should be pretty interesting. And then you can catch me basically on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I believe on Twitter, I'm Author Vitesh. The other sites, it's just Vitesh Eneker or Victor Eneker. I'm pretty easy to find. Eneker is spelled E-N-A-K-E-R. So basically, you type that in, you should find me fairly easily. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate you guys having me on the show. I appreciate it. It's nice to do.
Oh, it's been a blast. I love getting to go into a deep dive behind this. Yeah, went quick.
Yeah. And then me and Ollie are going to come up with some recipes.
Yep.
So
yep.
It could be pretty interesting.
New venture coming up, folks.
Yep.
It's right up Holly's alley, too. This is great.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you, Vic. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, and it was great to have a front row seat to watch the process of your first novel and be able to be a part of getting that out and watching you and Holly work. That was awesome. But thank you so much, and we'll definitely have you on the near future because this holiday season you'll have a couple of new children's books to talk about. So,
yep. Yeah,
we'll have you on again sooner than later to visit again. Thanks, Vic.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And it's great to work with both of you, too.
All right, Vic. Well, Holly, you want to do the closing ceremony?
We're going to be chatting soon, guys. Keep your eyes and ears out. We're gonna come up with something fun.
But,
join us next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and be creative for the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you then. Good night.